Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black. And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
What are some of the factors that go into evaluating a business at any given time? We asked valuation expert Christopher Mercer.
It's one thing to say that your value is worth what a willing buyer and a willing seller will pay, but that same willing buyer and same willing seller won't pay the same thing in 2008 as they will in 2014, because in 2008 the world was full of uncertainty that caused financing to dry up and it was enormously difficult to sell. Some of your listeners that are listening to this need to think about the fact that they need to be thinking of an orderly transition of management and ownership, because when bad things happen to your company, you lose all flexibility in terms of ownership and management transition. So take care of those things now while you can.
Being in business is inherently risky. We all know that. But what are some of the most common mistakes that business owners make and their potential solutions? We asked for comments from attorney Mayar Ghassemian.
One of the important mistakes is not having a corporation or LLC or another form of entity that would limit their liability in case they get sued. I have seen a lot of companies that do this, and it's very prevalent in the construction industry. If they are around for a while and they don't have an entity, they are going to be sued sometimes, especially in construction. And what happens is, and they put their own personal properties in danger because they don't have an entity that would protect them.
What are some of the important factors that go into a professional business valuation? We asked expert Roger Winsby.
Valuation is really about a sense of future opportunities offset by the risks. And if you don't really think those through as it relates to each individual company, you won't really understand whether you might be above average on that multiple or below average, but it's going to be quite rare when you're right on the average or the median. It's quite an issue that comes up in terms of understanding, you know, the business and being able to document your findings. Valuation is really about future, and as much as, you know, people want to say, well, you know, here are my retained earnings and here's what I've done, and that's, you know, very important context, but ultimately if someone wants to buy the business, they're buying the future opportunity and weighing that against the future risks.
You know, a lot of business owners I talk to have an image in their mind of how they're going to put up a for sale sign and sell their business quickly and easily, get a big check and invest it. Here's a message from someone who's done it, Veronica Saldivar.
A lot of folks just think, I'm going to sell for X amount of dollars. And, you know, especially here for us in California and other similar states, taxes are a huge, huge consideration. It takes a big bite at your bottom line. I think also one of the other things is to consult with a CPA on that tax liability. When I was negotiating the sale of my business and negotiating the purchase and sale agreement, I also met several times with a tax attorney as well. He helped me draft the documents to prepare to make sure that I was going to fall under cap gains tax treatment, which was huge.
When you're undertaking a big project like exit planning, it's important to know that your advisors are using a specific process. Here's Leo Klein.
Our approach is to say, well, let's have initially that conversation. Let's do some initial fact finding on everything that is in, you know, that it needs to be looked at to develop that strategy. And once we've sort of have developed a strategy, what we do is present that strategy in sort of in a team meeting to all the other advisors, and if needed, we bring in some new advisors if there are certain gaps. Here's the strategy, here are the facts. Let's discuss this and provide your input and suggestions. Let's refine the strategy based on your expertise, and then let's finalize it and then implement it. And then from my perspective, best practice is that sort of you repeat this process once a year until you conduct your exit.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
If you're going to grow your business, you've got to grow your sales. Here's Brad Leggett.
One of the key things we work with is performance management. How do you set targets? How do you get a sales team to perform? Because in about roughly half the companies we go into, there aren't formal sales targets in place. And that can be very demotivational to a sales team because they don't know where they're expected to perform to. You often have a very frustrated CEO or head of sales that says, well, the team's not doing well, but they haven't articulated what that target is. And our approach is you work with the sales team to set targets. I mean, the first piece of advice I've got is get a sales target that's written down and put it in front of everybody. That's step one.
Okay.
At least have that. But it's much better to set targets with the sales team's involvement. So sit down, and you don't want to walk into this meeting with a salesperson without some idea of the sales target. You'll have an idea of where it should be. Let's talk about where we think we can get to this year and what our target is.
What are some of the key things that a buyer looks for when they're buying a business? We asked a gentleman who's bought a lot of businesses, Ace Chapman, for his ideas.
The two things that we focus on when either we buy a business outright or we go in and invest in a business is we want the operations really to kind of be everything to be there. What we add on top of that is two things. Most people have not spent a lot of time investing or building out their marketing funnel. And the second part of that is having almost like a franchise-like operations manual that allows the person to come in and feel really comfortable that they're going to be able to run the business and take over from where you are. You want to stand out and have those kind of extras that just make it an easy investment for the buyer.
Technology is here to stay, and having a technology plan is becoming very important. Here's expert Jim Blue.
And a lot of people have a business plan, but they don't have a technology plan. What type of equipment do I need? What type of services that I need? A large percentage of my time is helping people brush up on basic computer skills. I help them select the right equipment, programs, and services, really based on their individual needs. And anytime something new comes out, I'm getting phone calls and emails in terms of whether they should upgrade, whether they should get a new product. You know, the name of the game now is setting up a home office. Most people have some type of technology in their home. There's a big difference between using it for personal use and for using it for business use. And I have to really separate that based on how much time someone's going to be spending in their office and what they do for a living.
What are some of the trends because of the global economy? We asked international law expert Kenneth August.
You mentioned manufacturing. That's a perfect example of where the thinking today is very different from where it was even 5 years ago. And by that I mean traditionally a company might look at outsourcing their manufacturing, let's say to China as an example, in order to lower their cost of production.
Mm-hmm.
But really, with the consumer markets moving into those countries where they were outsourcing, it makes a lot more sense today to look not at a unilateral outsourcing manufacturing play, but how can you develop a revenue base and profitability in that local market? And maybe instead of doing all your outsourcing in China, you also have manufacturing in Eastern Europe or in Latin America, and they become concentric circles of new markets that you can sell your products and services into.
Most people think of planning for their death when they visit with an estate planning attorney, but here's another viewpoint from estate planning attorney Michael Wittick.
I tell people all the time, you probably came to me to plan for your death when the baby boomers' biggest problem, I think, is disability. In fact, there are things worse than death, and some types of disability fall into that category. They've already done a study in 2014 and determined that in California, the average cost of long-term care is now $94,000. I would say in almost every case, I recommend that people go get a long-term care insurance consultation just so that they can find out, because that's one of the things that is rapidly changing right now to take care of this increased cost. They are repackaging it, and there are new companies in, and some older companies that used to offer it are now out of California. Things are changing in that field just like many others.
I just love hearing the collective wisdom of our guests. You know, we've had so many people on. It's funny because during that little segment, I heard Spike Reel, our announcer, we used an old commercial in there where he said we're interviewing over 100 advisors. And as a matter of fact, we've interviewed over 1,100 advisors and authors over the last couple of years. We have quite a collection, quite a great collection of knowledge that you can find very simply by going to exitcoachradio.com and digging around, poking around there in our audio library. We have it set up so you can look and find. If you have a particular need, we've identified the top 5 or 6 needs of most business owners, listeners, and we make it very simple for you to go to school on that particular issue. My next guest today is Mike Goodfriend from Goodfriend & Associates. He's been with us before. We interviewed him back in April of this year, and he's a great source of information when it comes to leadership coaching information. And Mike is with Goodfriend & Associates from Houston, Texas. And Mike is an AICPA member and a speaker with Vistage Worldwide, which, of course, we think very highly of. I think very highly of. It's a tremendous organization, great place for business owners to, again, go to school and learn about how to be more of an owner and less of an operator of their business. And with Mike today and his work as a teamwork engineer and leadership coach, we're going to talk about inspiring leaders to become business game changers. Mike, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Bill, it's great to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, Mike. It's hope things are going well for you. It's been a good year for you, and I'm sure you're finding that people are looking for information so they can become better leaders, so that hopefully they can grow their companies and transition from full-time operators to part-time owners.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about you and your practice for people that might not have heard the April interview, Mike.
Yeah, sure. So I actually started my career with PricewaterhouseCoopers. I was kind of on the fast track in the audit field. So I kind of got the promotion to audit manager and realized I didn't want to do that all my life. I actually left the firm for a short time, and they asked me back in human resources. And I think that's when I first started being a confused CPA, because that was really more of my true passion. And one of the things I did when I was an HR manager there was I learned the Berkman Method. And the Berkman Method, for those of you out there who don't know, it's probably the premier personality profile instrument on the market. It really is a fantastic instrument to help teams grow and improve, as well as for leaders to really understand the depth of what makes them unique.
I haven't heard of that one. Has that been around for quite a while? And it's Berkman, Berkman, or something like that.
Berkman.
Okay.
It's actually been around since the 1950s. Great story. It's actually in some ways the best kept secret when it comes to that. But it's a fantastic instrument that can really help teams and leaders, turn their performance around.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
I actually started my business after about 4 years in human resources at PwC, and because I really enjoyed helping clients and wanted to do that on my own. So I launched my firm more than 25 years ago now. And I am a teamwork engineer and a leadership coach. I really help teams become more profitable and generate more profitable performance, as well as to really help leaders, you know, make dramatic shifts and steps in their leadership skills. And I've worked with all, just about every industry over those years, as well as just about any size. But my focus is generally in the $25 million of revenue and up.
And so many businesses in that space have people that they see potential in, but they need to get those people to become effective leaders, Mike. And so what are some of the keys to getting a mid-level manager to boldly develop into a as you call it, a breakthrough leader?
Great question, Bill. It really, I see four keys. I always talk about that. There are four keys. Number one, it's really important for the manager and leader to recognize there's actually strength in vulnerability. In other words, to really allow themselves to recognize what those weaknesses are and where their gaps are, so that they really can grow. So number one is recognizing the strength in being vulnerable. The second one is that they have to have their own personal reason to change. When they have that reason to change, the development and that bold development, it becomes very easy. I've seen situations where people have made those dramatic change when it becomes very clear there's something in it for them personally to change. The third factor that I've always seen that really gets them to go from a manager of their people to a breakthrough leader for the business is a passion for a business opportunity. So in other words, there's either a cross-functional initiative or some type of business opportunity within the company that they have a lot of passion for, because then they're applying those leadership skills. And then fourth is that the company, the organization, has created an environment where take risks when it comes to learning. And that way, you know, those individuals can really make a step change, as I say, it's a breakthrough. So those are the four factors that I see that really can take that mid-level manager and get them to become more of a breakthrough leader.
Yeah, and the first two of those are really up to the individual in question. They have to be open to expose their weaknesses so that they can work on those and then, like you said, be willing to change, be ready for some kind of change, to work on that, and to be willing to grow. And a lot of those managers, would you say, are just they're kind of not showing their weaknesses. They're afraid to show their weaknesses. They're trained not to show those and work on their strengths. So that must be a difficult situation in some cases to get people to expose their vulnerabilities.
Absolutely, I'm working with organization right now, and he, in the initial kickoff of a leadership training program, you know, I shared how important it was that there's a strength in being vulnerable. And after that kickoff meeting, he went to some of the executives and he said, "This guy's crazy. He's crazy. He's telling me something that is totally counter to what, you know, I've grown up as. I've grown up that it's a weakness to be vulnerable."
A weakness, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a very common view out there, and organizations sometimes reinforce that.
Yeah, and then you mentioned that there needs to be passion for an opportunity. That means that there needs to be kind of a motivating factor, a catalyst to show that you know, there's something to move into, and if you're going to grow, you're going to have to expose yourself. And the other factor is the external factor. The company has to be able to say, you know, it's okay. Take risks. It's okay. We're not going to fire you if you do something wrong. We're going to kind of be watching over you, and not let it get too wrong. But there has to be a environment that it's okay to take some kind of action. So those are all great factors, and that, in a nutshell, that describes, I think, an environment that a lot of people would love to be in. What happens when you walk into a situation where it's not like that at all? Do you say this is unworkable, or where do you start with that?
Well, first of all, I think one of the things that I do is my approach for developing leaders and really helping them break through. There's really two ways I go about this. One is to do one-on-one coaching of individuals, but the way that I find is most useful is a process that I developed about 2 years ago with the help of a colleague, and we call it the Teamwork Sharks. The Teamwork Sharks is a Shark Tank style approach to leadership mm-hmm. development. And really a lot of organizations get frustrated with leadership training. Number one, because the people, there may be great learning, but there's not enough implementation of the learning. And the second thing is they don't see the return on investment on that training because of it. So to me, it's important not only that they develop those leadership skills, whether it's delegation, prioritization, project planning, presentation skills. They not only need to develop those skills, there needs to be a way for them to apply those skills. So the Teamwork Sharks Leadership Challenge is the program that we do. And if I have a few minutes, I can share that with you. It's people can go to teamworksharks.com, and it says the Leadership Challenge at the top, and they can learn a little bit about it. But what it is, it's a six-month leadership training program, and there's three phases. The first phase is each of the participants gets one-on-one leadership coaching, where they have to do a self-assessment of their strengths and weaknesses, and the areas where they really want to grow as a leader, and they have to prepare a development plan that they present to the executives of the organization. Mm-hmm. The second phase, they focus on those common strategic leadership skills, some of those which I mentioned about, how do I prioritize and understand the difference between important and urgent actions? How do I become a more effective leader of cross-functional projects and initiatives? And how do I make compelling business cases through effective presentation skills? And then the third phase is really where the application comes home, is they have to present a business opportunity, a cross-functional business opportunity that can be achieved only by working well as a team. And it's a business opportunity they want to lead. And that's where the Shark Tank style approach comes in. They actually present that business opportunity to myself and a colleague, who are the Teamwork Sharks, not only to us, but also to each other, as well as the executives. And then the Teamwork Sharks award a winner, and we give something out called the Teamwork Sharks Tooth Award for what we think is the best, the biggest, and most probable business opportunity. And then the executives decide after that which one or ones they want to approve for going forward. So that's really how the process works. It really, I've seen some amazing and dramatic changes in people, not just because of what we teach them, but because they have motivation to learn and to take some risks.
So it's a great process. It makes a lot of sense, and it's very well thought through, and it sounds like it takes people. First, you start again with them individually, and then you break them into teams, and then finally they demonstrate their skills that they've learned, and they get to grow from that experience as well. For a business owner out there who's thinking, okay, well, this sounds great. It sounds like perfect for what I need. What size of group would you consider to be a workable size for you?
Well, each group, I look at 8 to 12, 8 to 16 people are usually the right size. 8 to 12 is the kind of perfect sweet spot in that regard, because they're getting the one-on-one, but they get to learn from each other as well. So that's kind of the ideal size of a group. So, and these are people within generally within the same organization.
Okay. Okay. Now, Mike, there's so many business owners out there that say, you know, maybe I don't have 8 to 12, but I certainly need to implement some of these types of training mechanisms on my next generation of leaders, because if, you know, maybe they're in a leadership role because they were a son or daughter of the owner. And if they don't develop these skills, and we see this a lot in family businesses, the business has a very, precarious future. So are there ways for them to learn if they're in smaller groups? Can they learn? Do you have materials from your website or things that they can do? I know you have a new book out, and we'll talk about that. How can they learn more about that if they're not 8 to 12?
Yeah. Well, the same process can occur one-on-one, first of all. Some of the aspects of kind of group presentation are done more one-on-one. You know, even the teamwork sharks element of it is myself, the individual, and the executive. So there's still an element of that where they can learn similar types of things. But yeah, my new book is a great way to learn. The book is called Breakthrough Time, and it's on Amazon. It's listed, if you're searching by author, it's Michael Goodfriend. But it's actually not your typical business book. It is a futuristic business novel, and there's a lot of what I would call intrigue. It's a family story, and even some sci-fi in it. So the Teamwork Sharks help a new client commercialize a revolutionary technology, and how they go about doing that, and how people can learn about how the leaders make compelling business cases, what we look for as the Teamwork Sharks, and what makes a great business opportunity and a great case for it. So it's really a fun book. I had a blast writing it. It was very recently published. It took me about a year from start to finish. So it was something that I never thought I would enjoy as much as I did. But it's a really easy read. It takes about 3 or 4 hours from what people tell me.
Oh, that's terrific. That's about right for most of our listeners. They don't have a lot of time, read, but this is such an important topic that they need to really understand, how do I take these, how do I work on my business in this way? I have future leaders. They're just, I need to get them to a next level. And Mike, I was told I have to ask you about your secret sauce. I don't want to cover anything we've already covered. What's the secret sauce for how you inspire leaders to break through?
Well, the secret sauce is a little bit of what I was what I described in the Teamwork Sharks approach. What the secret sauce really is really the way I would describe it is in a very constructive way is really put people on the edge of anxiety. The way I would describe it, it's something that I call very constructive. We by making ourselves vulnerable, and not only in the way we learn, but the way we make compelling business cases, it accelerates how fast we learn and how fast we apply it in the organization. So that what I would call the edge of anxiety is just we could call it in a more constructive way. It's just being on the edge, is finding that edge where we're a little bit uncomfortable, but we get excited about the progress and learning that we've made. I've seen this in organizations that where people make these dramatic improvements in their presentation skills, or they have these epiphanies, like in one client right now, with a leader about what other, never was really tuned into what others needed, only tuned into what he needed. And so these are the things that happen when we are willing to live on the edge a little bit.
And I love that. Listeners, if you, I'm looking right now at teamworksharks.com, and I'm looking at it on my iPhone screen, and you got to go to the site and check it out, teamworksharks.com. It looks great. There's information about the book, about the process, about how you can get Mike Goodfriend as a speaker for your leadership team or for your group or your professional association. It's all right there. It's at teamworksharks.com. And Mike, a short interview, I'm sorry, today, but they're always short. But we get a lot of information out of you, and it was terrific information. I took a lot of notes, and I hope our listeners did. And I want to thank you for coming on today, and again, remind our listeners, go to teamworksharks.com. Hey, it's Christmas time coming up. Get the book Breakthrough Time, Unleashing the Value of Business Opportunities, and do someone a favor who is a business owner that you know. Mike, thanks again for joining us today. It's been terrific talking with you, and I hope to talk with you again real soon.
Bill, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this, so please stay with us.
You're listening to one of many shows on ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing advisors, authors, and thought leaders for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. If you'd like to be a guest on any of our shows, go to guest.exitcoachradio.com. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Hey everybody, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is,